This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
And what a great legacy to have. And comics really don't give themselves credit for that, is that we are healers. We're delivering this medicine to people. And if you can just clear away the ego and the nerves and the fears and the worries and the doubts and all that stuff and the criticism, if you can put that away and just keep it simple and give them that, it takes you into a whole other space. And then the material happens. And then the style is born out of that.
Hot breath. Hey, hey, hey. What's up, Hot Breathiverse? You made it back. Another Hot Breathisode coming right at you. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers. And you know what time it is. Say it with me now. Hot Breath. Ugh. The old familiar sound. Welcome aboard the Hot Breathiverse, Hot Brother and Sistern. This is Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. And you are tuning in to Hot Breathisode number 166. Yes, we have been out here supplying all your comedy craft knowledge. And today is a true comedy legend. Not only is he a comedy legend, he tells our most epic story to date. The most epic, we've had a lot of great storytellers on here, but the story you're going to hear on this episode is just buckle up. But not only does he tell one of the craziest stories we've ever heard on the podcast, he also provides some of the most practical advice we've ever heard on this podcast. So definitely tune in, and I hope you take this episode to heart. Me and my guest today both share in the passion of helping people, however we can help. So if you found this episode helpful, please reach out to my guest, reach out to me, let me know. And you know what you can do to even spread the positivity even further is to actually just share it with other people. Share it with your comedian friends, share it with your friends and family, just share it forward. And we will all help to grow what we call the Hot Breathiverse. So if this is your first time listening, you picked the perfect one to jump in on, and you now have over 160 other inspiring and informative interviews for you to go back and catch up on. So all that being said, I will say at Craig Hsu is where you can share your positive feedback for the guest today, and at Hot Breath Pod and at Joel Byers Comedy is where you can share all the positive feedback we got from this one. This is a winner right here, people. So buckle up. You may want to listen to it a couple times. There's a lot of great information in here. He only gave us a short window, but then had so much fun enjoying the episode that he decided to let us go even longer. So very, very humbled for a comedian at his stature to actually be willing to share more time with us after all he's been through and experienced in his almost 40-year comedy career. So you're learning from one of the best right here, people. On stage and on the business side, both he is a master of. And not only that, it is Valentine's Day, so there's no better person than the one they call Love Master to bring in our Valentine's Day week episode here. So prepare yourselves is all I will say. All right. Well, buckle up. You're about to hear a Hot Breathisode live from the lobby of a hotel before his final show on a Sunday right here at the Punchline in Atlanta, Georgia. So there's only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with Craig, the Love Master Shoemaker. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I muted the TV, and then we'll be the entertainment.
Okay.
So this is great.
And how long you want to?
How much time do you have? I mean, I can. I've done up to an hour. I can do 30 minutes. It's really whatever. Whatever you feel.
Was it four now?
Yeah, 4:30.
4:30.
Cool. Yeah, and that's this is our water sponsor. This is Fontis. This is Georgia spring water from the Blue Ridge Mountains. So we're trying to be professional for you here.
Oh, we going already?
Oh, we're on.
Oh, we're already on?
We don't have much time, you know. We got to go. Got to catch it.
I love that everybody saw the backstage, how this high operation operates.
You know the hustle, though. I mean, you've been doing comedy almost 40
years. Now they're going to have a timer on me. They're going to know. He agreed to 45 minutes. I think they're at 40 right now. Now we know we have 5 minutes left. I've never done a show like that where actually the sitting down... Was even me saying, is it all right if we're here, all that was on?
No, whenever we sat down is when I hit it. And
okay,
started going.
All right. He's so good.
Hey, I've been doing this. I have over almost 160 episodes now.
Wow.
So we've been doing this a couple years. I've been doing comedy.
I was impressed by me doing The View 5 times, and now I'm
performing
on,
for four
I don't
presidents.
Even know if they've been. I don't know if they've been on that long. 160 episodes. That's awesome.
What's more impressive, The View or all the presidents you perform for?
Yeah, actually, we're doing this the day that George Bush he was in the audience when I performed for all the presidents.
Wow.
Yeah, and Barbara Bush was there, and I was so tempted to talk about her pearl necklace, but it was not going to come across. I
just from the Love Master.
I was once in my life I refrained, I zipped my lip, but I thought because you know I've dealt with hecklers before and bad audiences, but never security. Secret Service would have like jumped on me.
You just disappear in those kind of situations.
Disappear while. I'm glad I didn't do it, but anyway, it's great to do. We've got Ravens fans over here. Are the Ravens playing the Falcons this weekend?
I have no idea.
I see a lot of Ravens people.
I'm not
around.
Too hip on to the football anymore.
Oh, no?
No.
I have to be. I host a sports radio show on Sirius XM now.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know what the hell is wrong with me. I have too many things on my resume already. It's very confusing to people.
But that's what's so inspiring, I think, about your career, especially for comedians, because you probably don't know, but this podcast is all about comedy mastery, and
oh wow,
it's a lot of comedians listen or fans of comedy that love the How I Built This approach to the craft.
Interesting. Yeah.
So what's cool about learning about you is that you've been doing almost 40 years, and you're showing comedians that there's way more than just sticking to stand up.
That's actually what I. I mentor a lot of comics. I don't know if you knew that. It's not my bio, but...
Kenny Loggins' son was one of them.
He now tours with me, and he runs my company, and he told me when he was... I was touring with Kenny Loggins. Actually, I was in my 20s, and so exciting. I went from little comedy clubs to arenas and stadiums and Broadway. And it was incredible. And he was a little 6-7-year-old kid going, I want to be a comedian. Uh-huh. He tail around. I never saw him again in his adult life. And then Kenny played a concert at my studio. I have production studios, and Kenny was there, and he says, you remember my son Cody? I go, yeah, he always wanted to be a comic. He goes, well, he's now going to be a comedian. at 36 years old, he decided he's going to do comedy, and he shows up at my place. He's 6'9". I said, well, there's a bit right there.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I'm coaching people, I say, you've got to talk about what you know.
Hmm.
And I said, write material about being Kenny Loggins' son, because, you know, he wanted to avoid it. And I said, there's only 6 people on the planet that could do that material. Your 5 siblings and you.
Yeah.
So no one else can do that material about being Kenny Loggins' son, and it's really unique. And also 6'9", from Brad Garrett. That's about it. So he's good for the 6'9" material.
That's one of my favorite quotes is no one can steal you.
No. Yeah. That's That's why I went through a period of time in comedy where I just thought it was about making people laugh, and it was about the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's not organic, A, people can smell it, and B, you end up, you know, it becomes hacky, or you know, it's copied or even stolen.
Because you'd steal some material back in the day, right? Or you borrow, or
I mean,
that was almost the thing back then, though. I guess
to get your stage time, you do that, and you know, I see it now, and I don't get too judgmental about it because I understand it because you're getting your sea legs and stuff. But then I just hit this point, probably in the mid '90s, where nothing that comes out of my mouth is not experiential.
Gotcha. You know
what I mean? That way, even if someone disagrees with my opinion, which happens a lot in life, they can't disappear. They can't disagree with my experience. Mm-hmm. They can say, eh, that's not right. Uh-huh. No, this happened. And, you know, you can have your opinion on what my experience is or the delivery or whatever it is. But you can't deny someone's experience.
So so you started in the early 80s, like junior of high school.
Yeah.
So it took you
You really did your research.
How did you know
that?
You're the love master. We got to know.
I've been the love master. I didn't know that was included in there.
It was called Stars?
Do you know the people that have... Oh, my God. You're really... I'm getting a restraining order. This is a little creepy right now. Wow, no one knows that. That's some deep research. That's research that goes beyond when internet was around. I mean, this is when I was putting pamphlets on phone poles
to promote. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was a whole. I was the first one with a fan list.
Huh.
I put out postcards, and I would mail them my schedule and events and things like that. And you know, that's how I developed a following. But you know, I had people opening for me that wanted stage time. I started headlining early because I did impressions. That was the other one that's not organic.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, but it got me to headliner fast.
Gotcha.
So I did a lot of impressions, and I do two or three now. But different people would open for me, like Dave Chappelle when he was 14.
What?
Yeah. I was his first headliner that he worked with. Judd Apatow. He would make me little mixtapes. I still have the mixtapes, so he could, you know, kiss my ass to open for me in San Bernardino.
What?
Oh yeah, it's a Whitney Cummings used to tour with me and sell my merchandise. I have the honor of she mentioned me on a podcast, on Rogan's podcast, and said I'm the only guy that's never hit on her. The only headliners ever. I was pretty proud of that. I guess I was like, hey Whitney, not that I wouldn't want to. I just was married at the time.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of people are on that list, and people I've mentored, there's a number of them. I have them open for me, and I work on their act with them and, you know, and allow them. It's kind of like microwaving a career because you're going from 1 o'clock in the morning, bringer shows, stand in line, to now you're in front of A rooms, in front of great sold out adult audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great training ground, and sometimes people are not ready for it.
Yeah, and bombing is a big part of that. So, like, what is... I always ask comedians on here, like, their epic boo story or, like, one of the most unforgettable bombs they've ever had.
That I've ever had?
Well, it's almost 40 years. I know it's a lot to think
one
of,
was,
but...
Well, one always stands out as I was working this... This is back when comedy, they would put it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, it was called Mitchell's Comedy Club, Joe Donato, and he made a club out of a garage. And he, like, painted the windows... So you could see it was a garage door. You'd see the two. He had a double garage, and he painted over the windows, and he made a comedy club in Palmyra, New Jersey, right across the river. And I was having a really rough time because he would open up the show with really filthy premise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he sets the show up with like he was. I think his closing joke was. So I came all over the curtains.
Oh,
all right, here's your headline.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, and I was going, oh my God. And so when that sets the precedent,
of course,
you know, of the audience to what to expect, if you're not, you know, tripling, you know, my dog came on the curtains or whatever it is, if you're not upping the stakes on that, that he set the bar. So I wasn't, and I wasn't going well. And then I felt this like presence. It was very strange, and the audience was laughing when I wasn't telling a joke. I was like, something's going on, and I see this thing on the corner of my eye. I look, it's a guy humping me. He's dry humping me like a dog on a leg. He's going like this, and he had this face on him like he was like fully into it. Like, and I went, and it's the only time I've ever walked off stage.
Oh,
we're talking. I counted, I'm over 10,000 shows now,
mm-hmm.
at least, and I think it's the only time I ever walked off.
Did you say anything, or you literally just like
walked? Just went, oh, that's it. You know, it was just one of those, it's a full-on disrespect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just felt so violated, and so I'd say that's probably the worst situation I've ever had.
How long into the set was it?
It was pretty short.
It was pretty into the
yeah.
show.
And I don't even know how he creeped up behind me. He's a total creeper. He's like, he just got around and started.
Was that there?
I still have the visual of it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I got his card. He's my Facebook friend now.
Of course. Yeah. He's an engaged follower. That's what we're looking for now.
I'd love him to look me up if he's if he's by chance watching your show right now. I'd love to have a rendezvous.
if that was even a club anymore. Was that during the boom?
Gone. Yeah, that was the 80s. There was a big boom going on.
What was the boom like? It almost sounds like a cocaine-fueled just free-for-all.
Oh, it was. We got paid in white or green. That's you went white or green, and I went white, you know.
Oh, really?
A number of times, sure.
Wow.
The guy in Erie, Pittsburgh. I could tell you all the club owners that were heavy, heavy into it.
Uh-huh.
And, did my there's people over here. I don't know if I can talk about this.
Yeah, this is a podcast. We're doing a comment. It's called Hot Breath, if you'd like to Google it. Or tag us if you post it on social media while you're behind the scenes.
I might say something objectionable.
Cool. Okay. Well, enjoy. Thanks for hanging out.
The lobby is now R-rated.
This is now a live podcast, Craig.
This is fantastic.
So we were talking about the comedy boom. And
yeah, so they would, my first freebasing.
Whoa.
The guy said, I'm going to pay you. I didn't even know what freebasing was, and then it turned into crack, but it was called freebase. He shows up with a blowtorch in my hotel room and a big mirror, and I'm going, what am I doing? And I was just following the path of Richard Pryor, I guess, in every single way, but... yeah, it was. I remember with Rosie O'Donnell and I started together. We're like teenagers, and we're part of this improv group. And I remember us literally counting the comedians who were in the business. You could count them, like list them, because that's how few there were. And now there's tens of thousands of comedians who claim they are. But we, at one time, were going, oh, yeah, what about it? Oh, yeah. We made a list of all the comics. And I used to book the comedians as well.
Oh.
Like Eddie Murphy, you know, I had a one-nighter, came down for $100 from $150, I think he was, from New York, and they'd all come down to Philly, and I had this room, and yeah, it was a really transitional time into where we are today with comedy, but you know, we put our time in.
Do you think we're at a boom again?
I can't tell. Truthfully, I've stepped so far out of the business from headlining, where it's rare when I even see who's up and coming, or I don't watch. And I also made a decision years ago, so I wouldn't be accused of theft. I don't watch anyone.
Yeah, okay.
I watch the people opening for me to see if they step on any premises or whatever it is. And it's a tough aspect of it, because the one time I did stop in, my friend books this Five Threads. It's in my neighborhood. I said, okay, it's right down the street from me. And I went and I saw these up and coming comics, and I was really fascinated. You know, you can see the passion and the hunger, you know, and now I don't have that. I have a hunger of making money because I have four kids, and I know this is what I do well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm in, I do my thing. I don't hang anymore afterwards. There's no waitresses. That's why I retired. I retired at one point.
Yeah, for like 9 months, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Of course you knew. I was gonna say, I retired,
mm-hmm.
And what brought me back really was that I didn't have a retirement plan,
right?
And everybody, like D.L. Hughley's a buddy, and he goes, "Oh, you'll be back," because he thinks it's because he's still hungry. He thinks I'm back because of the ego. My ego's done. Mm-hmm. I don't have that drive anymore. I'm not doing it to get attention. I'm not doing it for love or what I thought was love or waitresses' phone numbers or any of that stuff. That's not why I do it. I do it now because I do like to share the gift that I've been given and developed, and even pass that on and be of service to other comics. So if I find one, so I found one that night who I thought, oh my God, I got a discovery here.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to her afterwards, and her name is Zara Mizrahi. And she really had that, you know, I really do think that I can pick the stars.
What is that?
Yeah. Well, what I'll get to that in
okay,
a second.
Great.
So I said to her, I talked to her afterwards, and she even had that off stage.
Okay.
She even had that. And I'm like, wow. And then I said, I thought I had a discovery. I was going to sign her. I don't even have a company to sign her. And then she tells me she's with one of the top management. So someone else already found her.
Right.
But now, you know, she's opening for me next week. And, you know, we've become friends. She was on my podcast. And wow, what a talent. And she has it. And mm-hmm. the it factors are absolutely knows who she is, even at a young age. She is and confident in that. And people smell that. The second she walks on stage, they know that this is someone that has a definitive character that is already developed at a young age. And some people have that, and some it takes them years. It took me years to mm-hmm. develop that character of what I am on stage and off. So I tell people all the time, the most important thing is your offstage work, is working on self and self-discovery, self-evolution. If you can get that down, you know, I've done shows, but it's not only that, it's the promotion of the shows. It's doing things like this, and you have to adapt to. I mean, here I am literally, you know, last week I'm on a national television show, and here I am literally in a hotel lobby
yes.
before I do my three shows tonight in Atlanta with a guy I met last night for yep. a couple minutes. And it's like, okay, you have to adjust, but it's only me who's doing that. It's not this joke teller that's doing that.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know when I started in a business, and a lot of comics are this way, it's like, set me up for the joke. But you can see in their eyes that they know it's coming, or they're searching for it or forcing it. And that is, I'd say, take a different direction from that. It's not about the joke writing. The jokes come out of the situations. It comes out of who you are in those situations. So if we have a funny moment, if I've ever made you laugh, or anybody here, if I ever made them laugh, it was just completely organic response, probably never even said before,
mm-hmm.
To the situation. And that's me doing that. That's not the joke teller or comedian doing that. So that takes, you know, it takes life growth, and certain people have it and some don't. And that's what I saw in her. And I see it with some others too. You know, once in a while I'll pop in or see someone someone sends me, you know, a tape, and that's rare. I don't even like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to be influenced either. I you know, and it can happen. Happens to the best of us. So
if I remove
myself from it, now I'm only influenced by, you know, a quarterback or a wide receiver. I watch a lot of football now. Now that I have my sports podcast, I've got a good quick release now.
Yeah, I'll absorb people's voice. Like if I watch too much, if I watch like too much of a Dave Attell, I'll like just somehow in the back of my mind start talking like him. It's very
and you
bizarre.
Connect with his rhythm. So then it becomes your rhythm as well because you like that style. You might not like my style or someone else. You might respect it or say, oh, that does. But but the ones that you can really kind of connect with,
mm-hmm.
those, yeah, you get, and you can see sometimes where people develop their comedy. It's even
for sure.
Regional. If there's like two or three people in that region that have a certain cadence and a style, you'll see a lot of the open micers kind of, you know, adapt that style or adopt mm-hmm. that style. And it's, you know, it happened in Philadelphia when I was growing up. A lot of people had this, you know, very similar thing. And now it's just, it is me. It's a heightened me that goes on stage. It's a little edgier, a little angrier at times. And times I pull back on that as well. It's a confident smile that's all throughout.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I know that it works, you know, the next thing that's coming, I know that it works. So it has a wry smile attached to it. And people like confidence. I think they're in the audience. You know, it's not like watching a rock band where they go, man, he sweated, you know, with comics. We got him. Uh-huh. You know, it's a whole different audience because they don't want to see you sweat. They'll see you sweat from hard work, but they don't want to see you sweat from nerves. They want to see you are absolutely in control.
And you said smile throughout is almost like body language is involved. Like what? Because that's something, finding your voice is one thing comics struggle with, and also the confidence in the body language. Like what kind of tips do you have in that direction?
Well, again, it's who you are in the world. I mean, there's some things I could still work on, like body language. I remember I went to the Tony Robbins, you know who that is?
Yeah.
And he's an old friend. He invited me. I went to this big geez, tens of thousands of people, and this, it was unbelievable. This guy's got it down. You just dance the whole damn time. He's like, it's like a DJ at a rave. Hey, okay,
you can do it.
I guess I'm getting better. I'm positive, but I did walk out of there with a. I've never been able to. This you have never could have researched. I've never said it before. I have never brought myself to any situation unless I do something like that with great posture. I think it's kind of the reason I never really made it to the top is there's always this little element of me that doesn't want to be seen. I know it sounds strange for a comic that's been in front of so many people, but there's almost an element that still wants to be able to be in my hotel room all day today, you know, vegging out or just, you know, be by myself and have solitude and not expose myself. So I don't really have the greatest body language in the world. Even here, I'm, you know, slumping, you know. A lot of people, like, you have pretty good posture. But I don't. Now, see, I think something was, you know, beaten into me when I was a kid is you don't show yourself.
Mm.
You don't, you know, wipe that smile off your face. A lot of those messages were part of, you know, who do you think you are? You know, I'll knock the block off your shoulder. Whatever it is, it's like, you know, just... don't take it all the way with your confidence, because then you're cocky. So I don't have great body language because of it. But no, when I do Tony Robbins for like 2 weeks, I'll walk around, hey, what's up?
Right, and then the light will slowly start to dim.
Yeah, and then it's kind of like the evolutionary chart. I go back to like the third guy.
Yeah.
He's got bad posture.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it's just one of those things. It's not like I think about it all the time, or, you know, I could obviously switch it up if I wanted to. But part of me, you know, I like humility too. That's one of the problems, and not to be political, it's one of the problems I have with Donald Trump. Now, I can also speak from experience, so nobody gets mad at my opinion. I've experienced him in real life, you know, real life, like it's a fake life.
Donald, but, you've met Donald?
Oh yeah, I've hung out with him, and
is that a green or white situation as well?
It's a situation where I literally, no, there was no coke involved. No money either. Well,
okay.
And actually, it was the first time I met him was Tony Robbins. And I was like, Tony, why did you have that guy? You know, because I'll never forget it. There's a lot of people speaking and they were talking about rejuvenation and all these R words. And he walks right out and he goes, I have an R word, revenge.
Whoa.
And I remember going, wow, that's your motivation. I said, Tony, why do you have him? And I think, you know, Tony's like, he's, you know, he's because he makes a lot of money, or whatever it was, whatever the answer was. I remember thinking, that's not who you are, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little taken aback by it, but that he would have Donald Trump as one of his speakers. Again, this is before politics, so take it away with you liberal, you Hollywood liberal. Just take the label away for a moment if you are bothered by this. This is my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience is he brags about himself all the time and it ends up, you know, turns into lies and it turns into boasting. And these are all the things I've been taught to go the opposite way of that, which is incongruous with the business that I'm in because I'm supposed to promote myself.
Exactly.
So I'd rather you call me a master than me call me a master, or you saying I saw your show last night and this is what the show was. I'd much rather that.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer that 100% than me saying, hey, I'm great. I can't even imagine the words coming out of my mouth, you know, in that way that he does it. And the bottom line is, vote for him or not, I don't resonate with that type of person. And yet many of those, my peers, made it like that.
That mindset.
It's the mindset of tunnel vision. I'm going to just keep going. I don't care who I hurt, who I offend. I'm going to use people along the way. You know, again, you see his track record, and I don't want to name comics, but there are comics that have done that I grew up in the business with.
Mm-hmm.
And they, if everybody, people ask me, like, what do they have in common, the ones who make it? That's what they have in common. It's an undying belief in themselves. And they go about life where it's an arrogance. That it's not empathic, it's not compassionate, it's just about them and feeding that ego that is so gigantic. And if that's what it takes to make it, I don't want to make it. I'm putting make it in quotes, obviously. I've
done subjective.
Well. Yeah, it is subjective. Right. Other people see my career and they go, oh my God, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know. But then there's others that go, who the hell are you? They have no idea who I am, you know. So, yeah, I never went to the top, didn't get my own sitcom when everyone else was. You know, I won awards, but I didn't take it further. And if I'm going to, like, be objective about it, I do think that that's the biggest part of it is I look at them, I'll call them the Trump types,
okay.
And I don't want what they have. I don't, if money leads to what I see as misery, what I see is a lack of character, what I see is false, non-organic, I don't want any part of that. I want the life that I now have, which is really awesome, you know, what I've created.
Is it easier to look back at that? Because, like, in the moment, you're voted Comedian of the Year, and they're giving away sitcoms like they're mints.
And Comedian of the Year, by the way, was the loneliest night of my life.
Really?
Loneliest night of my life. It was another ha-ha moment where I went, oh, so here I thought this would be the answer. So all of those things that motivated me, oh, that'll be the answer. That well, if I get that, then it will lead to this.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those that's that I got that were the goal, if you will, not one of them was fulfilling. Not one of them.
Oh.
Including Comedian of the American Comedy Awards. You know, the previous winners were Jerry Seinfeld and Ellen DeGeneres and Jeff Foxworthy. I'm going, hey, there's a sitcom. I'm gonna do a sitcom about a gay redneck and a show about nothing, you know, or something. You know, I'm bound to have, and I did have offers and things like that, but it was the loneliest night of my life because then you become the target, and comedians, you don't want to be on their bad side because they're the smartest people on the planet.
I agree.
So therefore, if the comedians are the smartest, they also have the smartest heckles, the smartest criticism, you know. So now it was that night I was alone in a limo. I'm going, where do I go now? I had my trophy with me. And I went to a place I don't even go. It was a Comedy Store. And I walked in with my trophy. And they were like laughing at me.
Wow.
There was nobody coming. I'm going, hey, man, come here. I've never been recognized in an airport. What are you, Comedian Mirrorberg Comedy Awards? All these things that I thought would happen. That would open doors. If anything, it closed more doors. You know, first of all, I wasn't ready. And, I should win today.
Okay, there it is.
I'd be ready for anything today, you know, because I know who I am, and I don't need those things to fulfill me. And that's the irony is now that I'm this age and this much time under the belt, and they're all looking for the new thing. There's no way I'd win one of those awards.
But it's so bittersweet in the moment you're like, oh, this is a low, and now you can look back and be like, no, that was a good lesson.
It was
I can now grow from. But like it, you know, I'm almost 9 years into the game, and I can look and be like, oh, I want to be on Conan or do Colbert, like have a Netflix special. Yeah. But it's almost like, I've heard this from other comics too, it's like almost the vanity goals end up just being almost a mirage.
Yeah, they are. And vanity goals, I guess that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could consider them, if you were working at a corporation, you could say, oh, I've advanced to vice president and then president. You could look at it as that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as standardized as an office situation or any other job for that matter. And you don't know what's coming around the corner. I have no idea. You know, I just keep showing up. I took a sports show on Sirius XM and I just started a podcast where I do it like I'll interview my accountant. I have no idea where these things are going. I just try to keep it simple and what's, again, I use the word organic. It's like, what is truly the message from underneath, from deep underneath? Now that all those layers have been peeled away, those insecurities and those fears and those difficult times that I went through in real life as opposed to comedy, that's the real life stuff is really horrific, some of it.
Mm.
But I'm through it. I got through. I'm a survivor, and here I am. Now who am I in the world? I like to be of service to people now. I like to be loving. I like to connect. And these are the things that move me into the next direction. That usually does not mean fame, though.
So for younger comics listening, maybe a shortcut based on your career and lessons you've learned is to almost take a self-reflection on what you personally want mm-hmm. instead of maybe what other people are getting.
Not more of what you want, of who you are.
Who you are, okay.
Who are you? Like, if we're all, you talk about human potential, the word potency is in there. Mm-hmm. So that means we all have a potency that wants to emerge, it wants to fulfill itself. So if you keep tamping that down through whatever methodologies you have, it could be through, cocaine, like it was me, or it could be through something that's not in integrity, because what wants to come out is filled with integrity, and it's filled with you, and it's filled with, this great essence of light. Mm. So, by the way, fear of other comics being judgmental will also prevent you from allowing that light to shine because we're so dark. So misery loves company,
yeah.
And that's another reason I don't really hang out with comics. It's just this misery fest of people. There's this thing they have. I remember my friend going to it called Sit and Spin, and I don't really know what it is. It's contempt prior to investigation, but it sounds like, just people just spitting out their resentments, and it, in a funny way. But I think that the audiences can also smell it if you're still in it. If you see what I'm saying, if you're still in that confusion and in that anger and in that rage, that's and the only way you're getting out is this dark act that doesn't have much light to it, and you're just and other people who are also dark are responding to it, which you could do well with it. But I think people realize at the end of the day that you have some work to do, and that's this biggest suggestion: is do that work. However you do it, in that self-discovery world, a lot of comics are too cynical to go to a Tony Robbins, or they would hear me talking right now, even if I talk spiritual, mm-hmm. there's that immediate reaction. I had a guy on my podcast, my old roommate, who's an atheist. And I said, so what do you believe in? And he said, well, I believe you'd be good to people, you'd be kind to people. I said, what if that's your God? It's just a label, If so, of being good to people, I said, that's more spiritual than a lot of religious people that I know. Oh, you're being good to people? Oh, you're telling the truth? That's great. So you're a spiritual human being. That's what I told him. I think I talked him into it.
you converted him. Yeah.
Spiritual practice. Yeah. Because that's what he practices. Mm-hmm. And he likes to give laughs and joy to people. I said, that's another great thing. It's spiritual in nature. People think you need to sit in a rock in Sedona in a lotus position to get spirituality. We are the spirit that we are allowing it to be freed, if you will. Like, we jail it up, with the cynicism, sarcasm, negativity, and all of that, knocking people down. All of that is preventing us from really allowing that blossoming, if you will. We're not watering the plant.
Another frustrating part in doing stand-up, and there is like a spiritual connection with the audience, and that if you aren't in the best mood, sometimes your jokes don't hit as hard because they can feel kind of the subversion in the emotion behind your material. But sometimes you have a joke that's, you've been working it out and doing it, and it's working and you're killing it, and all of a sudden you almost lose the freshness of it. It becomes a little stale, and then you stop delivering it as excitingly, and then it almost stops working.
I've had that happen many times. Yeah.
How do you? Because Love Master. How long have you been doing Love Master?
Love Master's a long, long time, for decades, and it made my career because people could remember that rather than my name. Mm-hmm. A lot of people also haven't made it because they just don't have the right name.
Because you turned into a whole brand, and it's been a book and a movie.
Branding is a big thing. And there was a guy, Tony Monica, tiny little club called Rooster Teeth Feathers. It was just a part of my act. I developed it actually on tour with Kenny Loggins. I developed not on stage. I developed it because I had like summer camp. I was touring with people.
Mm-hmm.
You tour with comics and start doing the Love Mess, they'll tear you apart. There's no way a comic is going to go, great idea. No, do a character and tell dick jokes. There's not a comic alive that would approve of that. So I was with civilians, I call them. Mm-hmm. I'm touring with civilians and made them laugh. And I started doing my act, and Tony Monica says, You should be bill yourself as the love master. I started doing that, and it's a very small part of my act, but that's what people come for. It's like a best of. It's like,
right.
But the advantage is over, like, Springsteen has to do Born to Run. He can't change the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't do Baby, I'm Born to Trot, I'm Born to Jog.
Right.
He's got to do Born to Run. People sing along with him. Whereas I can change all the lyrics to the love master and keep the character. I've actually changed them up a little bit to update them, too. It comes from, I let people know, there's a lot more revealing that goes on stage anyway, on even why I do comedy. Those stories are in there. And now I talk about the love master is my answer to girls who would all use the F word with me. Friend. Mm. I was always the friend.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little geeky guy, and they always liked the badasses. I'm like, oh, give the geek a chance, baby. And he's that down, dirty,
Oh, yeah.
You know, bad guy that they always ended up with. And I give them that guy, and it's crazy how some people connect with. I have a few people say it's awful, they hate that. It's the worst part of your act. Yeah, fine. You know, it's not, you know, everybody's got their hits, you know, and then some people like the other side of the album. What's the comparable term for that now?
The
B-side.
The B-side is all I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
The deleted scenes?
I don't know. But
the deep cuts.
I've got these other cuts that I really enjoy right now, but they're not the best of, and it's not, people aren't coming to see, hey, you know, how come you didn't? Well, actually, they do that sometimes. They'll say, why didn't you do this bit, or why didn't you do that, you know?
You must have probably had, like, out on the road over the years doing Love Master, you probably had some women. Like, you probably had to, you maybe, like, had some groupies you actually played Love Master the entire night with. Would you?
I had one. I did do that, yeah. unfortunately, I came out of character, and I ended sooner than I wanted to. I was like, yeah, baby. And I was like, oh, that was Craig, sorry. Can we have a, I'm always good the second time.
Hilarious.
Yeah. I had a crazy sex story here in Atlanta. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't rock and roll-ish, but there were times, you know, again, they were feeding this idea that I had of fame,
mm-hmm.
is that's what you're supposed to do. And I think that's what happens just in society, period. It's a motivator for athletes, for actors, for singers, for producers. You know, a lot of the producers are like, losery, nerdy guy.
The abuse of power.
And they, yeah, like mm-hmm. a Harvey Weinstein. I mean, that's a perfect example of this guy, you know, couldn't get laid, you know, but he became famous and powerful, and it's an aphrodisiac for people. And but it's the concept that needs to be examined and then hence dropped of I'm going to, it's predatory.
But what's the Atlanta story?
You really want to hear it?
We want to hear it.
Well, so, oh, it's really dirty.
Yeah, we've got time.
And it's okay.
We're at 36 minutes right now.
So, but I mean, you go there with this? I thought it was like a mentory type of show.
No, I mean, it's...
This will mentor you into demented.
But this is comedy, you know, the good, the bad, and the dirty.
Well, this is the dirty, all right.
Yes.
All right, this is word for word truth, by the way. It sounds like some letter you would send in the Penthouse magazine, but... I did tell it on one other podcast, and I never thought I'd tell it where people were, you know, this is good, this is not good for my family man brand, that's for sure, but...
it's all authenticity like we were talking about.
It is authenticity, yes, and that is the most important thing, and it is from my past, and I have learned from it, but I will tell this, actually, you can just tune out right now if you don't want to hear something that's debaucherous
mm-hmm.
and predatory, you can just stop. You know, I hope you. Hopefully, you've heard some nice things, and now we're gonna go into.
Okay, we're at 38. He's stalling until the 45-minute mark now. He's like, if I could just keep filibustering until.
So it was the old punchline.
Okay.
It was over 20 years ago, and I was with my friend Stanley Ullman. He was one of the guys who would open for me and tour with me. But Stanley is not one of the young up-and-coming comics. He's an older comic that I knew back in the 80s, you know, bald guy. Hasn't been laid since I think Carter was in office. I think it was the last time he was laid. But I preface that by saying it comes into the story later. So he's my running mate, if you will, my wingman. And I walk off stage, and there's this beautiful 19-year-old strawberry blonde shorter young lady. She goes, my friend thinks you're funnier than Jim Carrey, and she's in Playboy. I go, really? I go across the parking lot, and there is this vision. 5'9", blonde, unbelievable, about 19 also. Pulls the Playboy out of the trunk of the car. There she is. It was like a lingerie episode issue, but it's still, it, she looked great. And I go, hey, you guys want to go back to my hotel? And, oh boy, now we have people walking. This is great.
We're right good.
In the middle. Oh, this story is real. So they said, sure, we got to get rid of our boyfriends. I'm going, boyfriends pull up with a gun rack and a pickup truck. And they got rid of them. So I had to rent a car, and Stanley's my running mate. You know, and again, he looks like a, like, remember Weebles? It's kind of like a Weebles wobble. They all fall down. He's like as short as he is tall. He's like a little heavier. He can take his teeth out. I mean, it's not, a, you know, anyway, that's my running mate. So we were like little kids looking in the rearview mirror. They made the left. They made the right. They're really following us. Oh, my God, they're following us. So we get back to my suite, and I go into the mini bar, get them drunker. And so I start reading the magazine. I'm like, I'm in a chair like this, and they're sitting over there. And I said, yeah, this is very nice. You look awesome without your clothes. And I said, how about a live version? Oh, suddenly she goes, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And she goes, y'all know what queefing is?
Said,
I said, pussy fart? She goes, my pussy's so tight, I can queef jingle bells.
Oh,
so off
my
come the clothes. She has a heart-shaped strawberry pubic situation. And she gets on the ground in a lotus position, or like a yoga position, and out loud, note for note, like I misnoted that just now. She was much better with her vagina than I was with my lips trying to imitate her. The other one starts to get jealous, and she pulls her clothes off, and she also has a strawberry blonde pubic situation in the heart. It's like they called each other up and said, what are you going to go with tonight? And she says, my pussy lips are so loose I can tie them in a knot. So she starts yanking on them, and all of a sudden Stanley goes, she's pissing. She goes, no, I'm not, I'm coming, she's making me come. So the one who's doing the queefing is making her aroused, and she is wetting the entire living room, is soaking. I still think it was urine. Stanley and her, they insist it was her cum. So anyway,
so eloquently put.
Yeah. So the other one's in the second verse. unbelievable notage. And then she ties these, she's pulling them down. She's like getting them loose. And they're like Bermuda length. She could get into a country club. She's yanking on them. They were like udders. And then she ties them. I said, well, I used to help my mom with packages. And I put my, you know, she ties a knot around my finger. And I said, wow, it's unbelievable. So then I says, oh, it says here to the other one. I said, in your article that you like water. I said, I went in the other room. I filled up the bathtub. And the three of us are standing over her. This glistening naked body goes into the tub like Daryl Hannah from Splash. And I was just looking at her, and she goes, I could do all sorts of things with my pussy. And she goes, point somewhere. And then out of the water, she just rises up and whoosh, this squirt that came out. She would like fill herself up and it just a... You know those super soakers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I pointed to Stanley's. I said, how about his forehead? Just boom, right in the forehead. Then she gave him a wet t-shirt contest. It was awesome. It was so funny. Now, understand, I'm not really into the sexual aspect of this, although I am a little bit, but I'm on to the funniest. I always love funny first.
Right.
Stanley's into the sex. I mean, he's a big porn watcher. So we go into the other room, and she's like, this thing is just going, wherever I told her, wherever I pointed, that she'd squirt. So we go in the other room, she gets on the table, a coffee table.
Jeez.
And the three of us, the rest of the three of us are on the couch together, on the couch, just watching her like a stripper. And I'm like, and Stanley turns into a porn director, because he loves porn, he's addicted to porn. I see him pull it out, and he starts giving directions like a director. He goes, smirk her ass, pull her. Then the other one gets up and starts pulling her and smacking her, and she starts going down on her standing up.
Whoa.
And then all of a sudden Stanley goes, I'm out.
He finished.
And he walks out of the room, and now I'm left with the two of them in the living room. And the only bad end to the story it's still a good story, is I didn't do anything because I was just starting to date someone.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I thought what I did was more of a director. Like, I could have done that.
Oh, so you were like the puppet master.
This is my justification. I was actually going, well, I am in the film business. I just did a film last year. Yeah, I'm more of a director. I'm like, I actually was even doing that with the magazine. I'm going, it says you like water. And I would direct each scene, but I didn't direct the scene with me in it. Uh-huh. So I never participated. And I regret it now, not going all the way.
Yeah, I figured that was
because
the
relationship ended with the...
The girl you were sacrificing for? Act 3?
Yeah. So, anyway, that's... I can't believe you got that out of me, but...
yes.
I've lost all credibility. I was... Oh, geez, they're laughing at the front desk.
How can you not?
Well, anyway.
That's amazing.
So, that was one. And I had my times that were just crazy. But now to go back to the spiritual self... All of those times, again, like comedy and those, you know, goals that you have, you know, of threesomes and craziness and stuff like that, none of those they're worth just a story today. You know, I didn't grow from them. I didn't have the greatest moments. I remember threesomes. I'm so codependent. I'm going, oh, if one satisfies me and then the other one's going to feel left out.
Right.
Or not as good about herself, right? She shouldn't feel good that she's having a threesome with me, but still. But so there's that element. I think I'm different than a lot of people, but anyway, it's just who I am. And so the great moments, the pockets of joy for me are like these in-the-moment moments. Like I had a lot of them are spontaneous, but they come from, you know, my own source. I helped this guy, not helped him, this guy, his whole family are fans. And that's another thing I really like. I have generations now. It's really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the guy came last night with his Eagle Scout son, who's 16.
Whoa.
And the kid really, you know, couldn't believe, you know, Atlanta here and the father and their neighbors. And that's a really great aspect of it. So there's this gang of fans.
We're 45 right now, too.
Okay. All right.
But I don't want to cut you off. What do you got?
So we're okay.
We're okay.
Yeah, my show's in a half an hour. It's all right. I don't have to, this is my prep.
We hit the checkpoint.
I'm getting my voice ready for the three shows. It's the only place I do three shows, and I do an hour and a half show.
I know. Yeah, your opener does like 7 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So
well, thanks for being willing to go in overtime here.
Yeah. So, so this guy, his dad is on the way out. Older guy. And I said, can I visit your dad? And they're a wealthy family. The guy kept saying, what can I get you? What do you want? I go, I don't want anything. If I can bring joy to a guy who is definitely a fan, because they've seen me dozens of times, if I can bring joy, he goes, well, he might not know who you are. He didn't know his daughter yesterday. I said, okay. Didn't know what I was getting into. I thought I was going to the hospital, but he was already home with hospice type care. And I walked in, and the guy lit up. And the guy goes, oh, my God, it's the Love Master. He turns to his nurse. You know who this is? The greatest comedian. And I made him laugh. I told him dirty jokes because on their way out, they don't care
about
it.
Of course.
You know? And I tried out new Love Master lines on him. And, man, that was one of the great days of my life, was watching this guy light up. He's on the way out. And then I said, hey, listen, my dad's never said happy birthday. I have issues with my parents. Don't speak to me for years. I mean,
about yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mom never said she loves you, and your dad's a cult leader and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, it's a real mess. And,
she's a belly dancer and all that.
That's the good aspect of my mom. That was actually my great moment with my mom, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
So I said to him, would you be my dad for my birthday? It's coming up. Would you get me a card or call me? And he did. He called from his hospital bed.
Whoa.
And he was about to the next day get a feeding tube put in, which is the end. And he's got his mask on. I put my daughter on, who's another empath. And she's looking at him. She's 4 years old. She goes, she doesn't even know him. She goes, FaceTime. She goes, I love you, Joe. He goes, I love you too, Chloe. She draws him a picture, made him laugh because it looked like a penis. But anyway, and to make that guy happy and his son happy that's going on, just makes my life. And that's not some, I've played 70,000 people twice. That's way better than that. Because this is true. This is absolutely, there's nothing between us except for like some divineness. And he just passed away a couple days ago. He did die. And I know that I did something good. You know, that I can go with. It's better than the awards. It's better than the accolades. Mm-hmm. It's just that, those moments. And my daughter, by the way, when the camera went off, she bawled. She knew the guy was going on the way. You know, she just gets it at 4 years old. So if I could pass that on to the kids, and that's what I do now, and those are my great pleasure moments, and usually something to do with my wife or children. My wife just had this great surprise party for me the other day, blew me away. You know, and she found friends and I didn't even know she knew. She had found friends from childhood. I mean, it was crazy when I walked into this. I have a movie theater at this production facility that I own. And
is that Big Shoe?
A really big shoe production.
Really big shoe production.
Media. And it's just, it was filled with people. And I was absolutely just blown off. I couldn't even speak or walk. My legs were shaking because that was true love. You know,
I think that's important. The important tone to end this on for comics listening is we can get into techniques and like, well, how do you do this or that? But it really is thinking of comedy in terms of the impact you're making on these people. Even if you are like in a bar and there's like four people but those four people are there to laugh.
Yeah.
And treating the craft with that sincerity and that hold it to that high standard is just like that.
Well, yeah, and you know what it does? It also gets the nerves out of it because now it's not, you don't have performance anxiety, literally, like you do in sex. You have that obviously on stage. You have much less of it if you think, I'm just being of service to people.
Mm.
I'm going to hopefully catch a smile and a laugh and a giggle and take them away from what they're going through. Everybody goes through issues in their lives. And I can't tell you the amount of times that's happened with me, too, is like they're going through this or a death and we were going to cancel because and they show up and then you are being of service to them. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, George Bush Sr. Died today or yesterday. And that was one of the things about him that was so admirable. He's of service. That was his whole thing, was being of service. Mm. You know, you could disagree with his politics all you want, but that's his legacy now. And what a great legacy to have. And comics really don't give themselves credit for that, is that we are healers, you know, we're the doctors, we're the pharmacists, we're the pharmacy, we're delivering this medicine to people. And if you can just clear away the ego and the nerves and the fears and the worries and the doubts and all that stuff and the criticism, if you can put that away and just keep it simple and give them that, it takes you into a whole other space. And then the material happens, and boom, then the style is born out of that, and then who you are on that stage is consistent, and they have confidence, and then your confidence, it's all rooted, though. It has to be rooted in that. It can't be rooted in a goal that's up here or some idea of what success is. It can't be or trying to appease people or please people. It can't be that, because if it's based on them, you're going to fail. Because if it's based on someone else's judgment, you're going to fail. Because everyone's out to judge and criticize because they don't want to look at themselves. So if you could just reflect back to them some sort of a goodness, like I was telling my friend was saying, or kindness or love, or you're giving them something that they're missing. And a lot of comedians don't look at it that way. You know, it's a pretty selfish business a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So if that's some sort of a message that I could get across along with my queefing story.
I love how that's like the arc of the whole show is like we took it way up here and then we're like, but be selfless and self-aware and that'll then create your success.
Can you have an edited version of this? Like you could have an X-rated version and a G.
With over 150 of these, you know, that people know what they're getting into.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. This is, you know.
I hope you knew what you were getting into. Surprises. They didn't know what they were getting into, a queef story.
Well, as soon, I was like, oh, okay, Playboy, it'll be fine. And then you're like, and then she queefs. And I was like, oh, whoa. And then she gets in the bathtub. I was like, oh, wow, this is going there.
And
did you think
about stopping the story?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay, all right.
No, I was going to press and be like, were you talking like Love Master? Like,
I didn't do Love Master, okay. No. I don't think I did. That part I don't remember.
Yeah. This has been great. The fact you're even willing to sit down and do this, not even knowing me, but just being like, oh, a fellow comic, I'm down to support them doing something positive. So
hopefully you'll send people over to my podcast, which is actually called Craig Shoemaker, Can I Help You?
And
it was spawned because I do like helping people. And if this helped you, if this helped anyone out there, then I'm good. If one person says, I'd be happy if one person watched, by the way.
Oh, they will. No, people watch.
No, I'm just kidding. If somebody respond and say, I got this out of that, I now know what to do if I meet a queefer. I mean, whatever it is, however I've helped you.
Yeah.
That's why I do that podcast. And it's real different. I used to do the big radio type thing with the, you know, screens and microphones and big guests, Samuel L. Jackson and all that. And now it's like, I'll interview my accountant I went to kindergarten with, you know, and it's more, you know, how can we help one another? We're on this planet together for a short time. What can we do to support one another? And that's what it's about. So, and hopefully get some laughs as well.
Well, before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
Sirius XM every Sunday. It's 8 o'clock Pacific to 11 o'clock. It's PM and it's called Untied with Craig Shoemaker. You see the shoe thing? There's a lot of shoes involved in CraigShoemaker.com. And follow me on the, you know, Twitter. I'm the Love Master. Instagram, I just hit 5,000. Very excited, but they still won't verify me. Can't get verified.
Haters.
Are you verified? I will. I would hate you if you were verified.
I thought you were empathic. Not on that area. Not on the blue check.
Not on the blue check. I got it on the other ones, but I don't have it on Instagram. They turned me down.
Oh.
Haters. But, you know, they're not looking for, you know, someone from the past and someone has this career that's.
But see, that's that vanity goal we were talking about, Craig.
The blue check is the vanity goal. Yeah.
We don't need that.
Well, I only need it to extend my reach. That's the irony is. The only reason I want to be like famous or more people following me is so I can help them or let them know where I'm performing or I'm a speaker as well. I speak about laughter healing.
Laughinghelps.com is
it's
that?
Called laughterheals.org.
Laughterheals.org.
Yeah,
org.
And it's an organization I was spawned again out of being of service. My friend was dying. They gave him 3 months to live and he lived 15 years past that prognosis by adding a lot of laughter to his life and a lot of joy. It gives you reason to live.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing that comics deny is what we actually are giving to people.
Yes.
It's a new look on life and, you know, turn away from all the, there's so much toxic out there. It's like, you know, let's get together and you know, you're like my brethren, you know, you're a brother in this world, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're in the same business.
Mm-hmm.
And when you reached out to me on Twitter, first thing I noticed is you weren't following me.
Yeah. I just knew you were in Atlanta.
I can't even believe I'm doing this.
Now I'm following you.
You had not followed me.
I'm not active on Twitter at all, though.
But oh, really?
I really don't.
No,
I'm not on Twitter a lot.
Now I have a restraining order against you. You know too much.
As soon as you said yes, though, I was like research mode. That's what I do.
Oh, you must have.
These interviews, it's like I want people to listen to Hot Breath and know, okay, I could go listen to 10 of their other interviews or I can go to Hot Breath and get all of them in one.
Wow.
So that's been the goal of all of them.
Well, I've only told that story to one other podcast, so that was it. So
we made it.
And I'm going to cut it at that. Never tell that story again.
Never again. A Hot Breath exclusive.
Yeah.
Well, Craig Shoemaker, thank you so much for being on Hot Breath.
You're welcome. I hope it was enjoyable.
It was great. Yes.
Thank you, bro.
All right. Wow. I genuinely hope you had as much fun listening to this as I had much fun doing it. In all honesty, we have done countless interviews on comedy as an art form, but to actually step back and look at comedy as the service that it is, I really hope, comics, that this is inspiring you to not take comedy so carelessly, but it is an actual service. You are actually helping people through whatever they're going through your jokes. So really take the craft seriously. You know, there's plenty of interviews you can go back and listen to on here about joke writing and performance and tips with the business side. But this interview is such a breath of fresh air and just inspiring comics to not only help comedy fans, but also help each other. We are a community here. We are a collective, you know, as Craig said in here, he called us a fellow brethren of comedy. We really are in this together. So the more we can come together as a group and as a creative community, I feel like the better we're all going to be for it. So this really just, it almost like, you know, squeegeed the third eye and just thinking of comedy beyond just set up punch, but actually the energy behind it and how I'd never heard comedy explained like this before, but really where it is about the self-exploration. Because we hear a lot of comedy tips about, well, you gotta write jokes this way and the delivery. But Craig's take on it is something that has completely changed my approach to comedy. And that you got to do the self-identification first, the self-awareness, that self-fulfillment that'll then translate to the stage. So, hey, we all know comedy is a process and it's a lot of trial and error, but if we could make any impact from this podcast, it is all to help comedians get better at comedy faster. And I hope that you will take away from this episode a lot of the positive elements that we have shared through this talk, and just really, hey, look inward, and then that'll start to help inform what you're projecting to the audiences you perform in front of. I know we got a little philosophical there or whatnot, but I'm really just blown away. Even listening back on this episode, we recorded this a couple months ago, but to even now listen back on it before I post it, I'm just like, wow, is really making a big impact. And I hope it made a big impact with you. Like Craig said, he is all about helping. If you found this episode helpful, please, please, please reach out to him. Let him know how helpful this episode was. I cannot tell you, beyond the iTunes review, which I appreciate, and beyond the reposts and the shares that I appreciate, I still get the most fulfillment from this podcast from hearing the Hot Breath guests being like, hey, the Hot Breathiverse rallied around this interview. I had so many people reaching out to me talking about how awesome this was. Countless guests have told me the feedback they've been getting from the listeners is really surprising. And I truly believe we're building something special here together. And that extra element for the people that come on this show, when they hear the feedback they're getting from you, and just the impact they're making directly on you, is really going to help to spread the Hot Breathiverse beyond leaving reviews. That word of mouth is where the Hot Breath, that's the core. That is the core. So many of you reached out from the UK to New Zealand to Canada to, you know, Seattle and Arizona and everywhere in between. So the more we can kind of build this community together, it is an international community, I think the bigger we'll be able to get. So if you're interested, and I know I've expressed before, we're building a network here. We're building a comedy network. So if you'd like to be a part of the early stages of that, we did create a Facebook group called Hot Breath Comedy Network where you can request to join on there and connect with other listeners and comedy fans and really just start to learn from each other, because that's the whole goal here, helping each other out, just like Craig said. So if anything this podcast could share with you, I hope that has inspired you to take your comedy to the more personal level by first focusing on yourself and then letting that inform whatever material may form from that. So that's exciting, man. I think this is a perfect way to kick off the Valentine's weekend. All about love, and this is all about love and sharing. So thank you for sharing your valuable time with me. I want to help you however I can, so please don't hesitate to connect with us at Hot Breath Pod on all social media, joelbyerscomedy@gmail.com if you want to reach out to me directly through email. Many of you have reached out scheduling writing sessions to help punch up old material and preparing for new sets or turning dirty material into clean. You know, I'm not only am I a podcaster and a full-time stand-up comedian, but I also teach my own comedy classes, and I'm happy to help you however I can. So let's stay connected, and if anything, hey, hit up Craig. Let him know. At Craig Hsu. Let him know, wow, you really impacted my entire approach to comedy. This is, guys, a 40-year comedy vet. This is all coming from a true place of experience. So This episode is what it's all about, people, all right? This episode is why Hot Breath exists. So thank you so much for being a part of this awesome community. And thank you so much, of course, to my wife, Erin Byers, for making the theme song of this podcast. And thank you to you. And until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.